Welcome to Biggest Geekus. We're your host. I'm Randy.
And I'm Joe.
This is episode 181 of our podcast, and the date is Tuesday, March 5th, 2024.
Howdy.
What's up, man? I got something weird going on. Hold on a second.
Yeah, me too.
What is that thing?
There's a problem with streaming to... Hold on.
Some destination.
Some one of the destinations.
I'll let you handle it, man. So I was not here last week, and I apologize, guys, and thank you, Patrick Demo, for covering for me. But Joe and Patrick did a bang up job. So,
hey, I'm gonna drop out, fix it, and drop back in.
Okay. So, report: my mother is doing a lot better. She's still in the hospital. I do have to keep my phone handy here, so I will try my best to stay focused. I'm pretty excited to be back on the podcast. I've got kind of reinvigorated this week for a couple of reasons. One was listening to Joe and Patrick. I was inspired with a lot of ideas for our campaign setting, and I'm reinvigorated to work on Mudsword, a little bit to do with David Gwill. I've been diving in really heavy, reading Dungeons and Delvers. I'm about halfway through the book. I think that... I don't know if I'll choose it as my game, but there's lots of inspiration in there. I think David did a heck of a job, and there's some subtleties there that I can't wait to play and see how they work out. I'm intrigued by several of his classes. I'm just getting into the combat system. And his races are all fine. I think I'm more intrigued by the classes than the races, but that's to each their own. He's got some neat twists on optional races and standard races. But who do we got here tonight? We got Martinson and Larry Elliott. What's up, Arn Man? Patrick Demo, Flady, Darth Theic. Larry says, what is the bet on Joe's computer this week? I don't know if it's Joe's computer or something squirrely is going on in the StreamYard. So I think Joe's about ready to hop back in. So
hopefully fixing it.
Yeah. Well, it's a weird looking thing. I don't even know what it is. What does mine say? We're having trouble streaming to your destination. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. So, whatever. How you been this week, dude?
Okay. You know,
You still looking? Joe's still working, so I'll keep talking. But Dungeons and Delvers is a very interesting system. I first got a little put off because I thought it was a lot like it was reminding me of third edition too much with all the talents. Our man, Steve, you and I are just beautiful beyond belief. We look fabulous.
Well yeah, but over on Rumble.
Weird stuff. See.
Yeah, it's not showing our pretty faces, even though I fixed what the problem was.
Huh.
I'll
hop out and go back in a minute. That's crazy, Tam. What is up, Bruce Lombardo?
I'm really not sure. I'm really not sure if Rumble's we can both leave and then restart and it'll all be honky dory. Mm. We might just have to say sorry to the rumblers out there.
Yeah.
All one of them or two of them that are, I'm just going to put in the chat.
Yeah.
Rumble.
It's being squirrely.
Stream is borked.
Yeah. So, Dungeons and Delvers looking pretty cool. Not sure I'll play it long term, but I don't know. His talent system's a little different than feats, so I'm finding it kind of interesting. Have you read it all the way through, Joe?
Have I read
Dungeons and Delvers all the way through?
Not all the way through.
Okay. I've been enjoying it, so I'm gonna try to read all the combat stuff. It seems like you got so many choices that you just can't have it all. So that might end up being a good thing.
Yeah, it might be a matter of... I'm just going to close it because it's not working. So I'll tell you what happened is in StreamYard, you have to reset. It's not an automatic thing. So with YouTube, you just have to connect your channel. You don't have that capability with Rumble in... right. So yep. I'm just going to end it.
Yeah, Rumble's just, yeah, probably no rumbling tonight, folks.
Yeah.
What's up, Real Long Shot? Glad you're in.
Anyway. So yeah, so with you have to change it every time you do a new string. So this time around, instead of putting the one of the codes in the right place, I put it in the wrong place. And of course it didn't catch it until there's the error there. And that didn't pop up until we started live. So once we start, I don't think we can quit out and go back in without there being a bit of an issue. So we're just going to have to skip Rumble tonight. Sorry, guys.
I don't know if Bruce is talking about Big Geek Emporium or general 15-ounce mugs. He's waiting on them to make their way to him. He got set up for his new schedule for his training week. His boss is excited. His new boss is excited. His current boss is not so much excited.
He's just angry. Yeah. Expect those in about a week. Your mug, was it more than one? I don't think it's more than one. No. Yeah, some new 15-ounce mugs. Yeah. 1 week.
Okay, cool. Good deal. So we didn't, you know, did we play? We played this past Friday. I played Friday and Saturday. That's right. I played both days. Is that correct? Yes, I did.
Well, I don't know why you're asking me.
Didn't we play?
We played Friday.
Played on Friday and Saturday. I played the Minders game, another Horde Wars adventure. Mr. Larry ran it, so that was super fun. We went from our EarthX to the Horde Wars world, and he made massive changes. We have to inform Todd that his game is now different than it was before. The world lore has now changed forever.
I think that he might have a couple of issues with that.
I don't know what to tell him. That's what's happened.
Alrighty.
It happened. I don't know what to say. I guess you could say it's just our game.
Did you guys like destroy one of the kingdoms or something?
Not exactly. We may have introduced some alien tech into the world.
Okay. That just sounds fun, though.
Mm-hmm. So, but that's just,
I mean, if we think about the history of our game, there's always been some hint of technology, even way back in the Beckme era. There was with the Mystara campaign world that had technology in the Glantry, the magic city. There was a, you know, spoiler alert, something that's been out for 50 years. Who cares? There's essentially a nuclear reactor that's leaking radiation into the city, and then that radiation is converted into magical energy.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
And we've got some old modules. What was it called? The one where you could get lasers and stuff that you can go into a ship?
Expedition to the Barrier Peaks.
Yeah, they had a spaceship in there and robots and stuff.
By tech, I mean, what we've really introduced is the possibility of an very dangerous drug / poison infused with ghost rock from the Deadlands world.
Oh.
And mixed with some high-tech crapola, and it was dropped into the Horde Wars world. But
did that sliders thing.
I'm sure we fixed everything, though. I'm sure there's no residual problems.
It will probably, you know, recursively leak into everyone's books and PDFs, you know, kind of automatically.
It's ghost rock, so there's a mystical element to it. It's dangerous. Never can tell.
Right.
So
right.
I would not be sure. Be careful playing Horde Wars, folks. There's some dangerous stuff rolling around in that realm. Well,
ghost rock has a kind of emanation that comes from it that can be dangerous if you have too much of it, right?
Well, and people use it to do weird science in the Deadlands world. And like when you burn it, you can hear, they say, because it sounds like people screaming. They say you're hearing the souls of the damned screaming. So who knows? But this has been liquefied and mixed with other stuff.
L says you have to get player permission now to change the world, according to EM World. GM has no right to any PC. Okay. I'm not sure. He's probably just trying to say the DM does not have any way to negate when a PC says who owns the PC when the player quits thread. Okay. There's a thread that says who owns the PC when the player quits over on EM World. Okay. You know, luckily, we here at Biggest Geek is, haven't read Ian World in 10 years.
Yeah, I haven't checked it out in forever.
Yeah, I don't care what Ian World says.
But I get what El's saying. There's a lot of that crap going around that's just stupid.
But and it's been going on since probably before Ian World.
Well,
when players would be saying stuff like, the DM can't tell me that.
Oh, players. They're funny. I like when they talk like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, that's cute. Now, shut up and die. Yeah. But Mr. Larry Elliott's the one that did that. So blame Larry. Bruce Lombardo says, if Horde Wars has controversial history, I might do more than just let it sit in my game file. I don't know about on his D drive if it has a controversial history. I
mean, well, depends on who you talk to. It's very has a traditional inspiration. So if it's too traditional, then some people will, you know, call it colonialist trash. So
But that's interesting. So that question of, well, here's the deal. If the player owns the piece of paper, if he's been playing that character, even if I gave him a piece of paper, if I gave him a character sheet, he owns the character. I mean, and he can take off with it and say, you can't use it. Now, he can't stop me from actually using it because I can just remember all the things I can remember about it and use it however I want. So if he quits, he's no threat to me.
But what do they think they're going to accomplish? I'm taking my character with me. Okay, see ya. Mm-hmm. Here's a copy. We're going to find another player. Take off.
Yeah. Oh, El says it's a 500 post thread saying a GM can't use an NPC, a PC as an NPC without permission because even if the player, whatever. Oh my God.
If a player feels like his player character sheet is his intellectual property, in the DM using it, he has some kind of case to make. Good luck taking that to court somewhere.
Right.
You'd be
better off if the DM stole your dice. Then you'd have a case.
It'd be more likely that the GM can claim fair use. Right?
It's not even a thing.
No, it's not.
I'll change your character's hair to blue instead of his current pink, and I'll just run it the way it is. That's hilarious.
I mean, you might want to think of your character as your intellectual property, and I can see on some level how you can maybe make that argument.
Okay.
But not from the point of any kind of legal stance where someone is constrained from doing anything with it. It's so weird.
Do you have it copyrighted somehow? I mean, you'd have to. I mean, I literally could take an idea that Joe has for a character and play it in a different game.
Yeah.
I mean, literally photocopy his character. What's he going to do?
Well, apart from a firm, manly nut punch.
Right, except for that. And then when I get up off the ground, just continue playing. Oh, well.
Oh, people. Boy.
Turd's going to turn.
People are salty.
Give me a moment.
I don't know. I think Cal, that was probably actually easy for her to do. Ah, yes, L. Many apologies. Totally forgot about the whole.
We love that
stupid emote thing. That
we love it secretly. We love it
secretly. We're back here going. Mm-hmm. Laughing. Oh, let me see if I can fix that darn thing.
Right. Don't fix that. Elle should be hitting hearts all the time to all my comments.
Yeah, without reading them.
Sad face. BG won't read usual male pattern thinking from me when I mention. I don't understand. What's Amber Heard got to do with anything? I think she's kind of just a doofus, right?
Well, I bet if we put Amber Heard in our tags, then it might get a few more views because people will search on that. And, you know, the title won't say anything about Amber Heard, so they'll have to watch and see where it's mentioned at and see if there's anything have to do with it.
She looked pretty nice as Mira in the first Aquaman, but she's a woohoo crazy.
Yeah, well, she's an actress.
There you go.
Oh, sorry. She's an actor in today's parlance.
Whatever.
I can't, if I call her actress, it's some kind of.
She's an actress. Sounds good.
Some kind of.
Sounds good. She's an actress. Code.
Yeah, I believe that.
I have no interest. I have no interest in TikTok woke nonsense. I don't know what that's talking about, but all right. Good deal, L.
Oh, it's the emote thing.
Oh.
Yeah.
We got to get into some woke nonsense. We can join the club.
Is there any from Hasbro and or WotC this week? I didn't see any.
Nah, if they did, it wasn't. I don't care. Yeah. It doesn't matter to me. So it's all good. All right. Yeah. Cal. Harry and Megan, they count as aberrations. That's cool. All right. Shall we get into the first topic, or what do you think?
We shall.
Okay, we do a little monster mash. We're going to kind of, I think we'll probably end up streamlining this a little bit. I don't know for sure. But on the wiki for, it's 5e crap, though. It does have a decent definition. It says an aberration is an utterly alien being. Many of them have innate magical abilities drawn from the creature's alien mind rather than the mystical forces of the world. So that would be the topic of the monsters that we have. And as you look down through the list, now admittedly, Randy did not do a deep dive. I've been pretty busy this week into checking it really thoroughly. I'm usually real careful and I thumb through my PDFs and make sure that I got it all straight. But for the most part, they didn't have any kind of classification in OD&D. They had a few creatures that we would consider probably aberrations, but none were called that. I didn't see the Beholder. I didn't see the Mind Flayer in OD&D. Beckmead did have the Beholder, but that's all that I saw as far as familiar aberrations, and I don't recall them having an aberration category.
Right. So, the way I've always looked at aberrations is that they're creatures that don't easily fit in any of the other categories. They're hard to categorize because their body types are odd. Yeah. However, mm-hmm. I'll have some other points to make about mm-hmm. them a little later. But yeah, so you could even say anything out of Cthulhu would be an aberration.
Yeah, and I kind of wonder, even with, let me see if I can find my first edition list. I've got it here somewhere. I don't see any classification of even, let me look at the Beholder. It doesn't really call it. It calls it a malevolent. This is in first edition. A malevolent floating one-eyed. This is from Wiki, so it could be different in the actual book. Malevolent floating one-eyed creatures who evoke terror and fear into the hearts of mortals, shoot powerful beams out of their eyes. As far as an origin, they give me a bunch of links, not much to go on. I don't remember personally there being much of a discussion of the Beholders as being, you know, oh gosh, how would I phrase it? A category of creatures. I don't remember that even in first edition.
No, well, they didn't have a lot of categories.
Yeah, I mean, Beholders. Now, Beholders and Mind Flayers, and gosh, I can never say this. Ixit, Zatchittle, those kind of mana ray creatures that mm-hmm. had vampiric cleric leaders. I didn't find that to be a thing in terms of discussion. Even in second edition, there wasn't much on that. Let me double check.
As far as grouping them into a
thing. Because before I make this statement, I want to double check. Again, I apologize, guys.
Their origin they've had different origins over the editions. And even with, say, Spelljammer.
Yes.
Spelljammer kind of had their own take on the Beholder and the Mind Flayers.
Yeah, so they didn't categorize them as such. It wasn't until third edition that we got mm-hmm. the actual categories, and they continued them on in fourth and in fifth. So the categories were stuck then. They were categorizing monsters. I think the rule encyclopedia had humanoids and a few other type, you know, list things. Of creatures, but they didn't have aberrations. That wasn't one of the categories. They had other categories that I didn't bother mining. But for me, the Mind Flayer and the Beholder still kind of stand out as the ultimate aberrations in, and I think probably most people's minds, even though they are D&D's creations.
I want to start something that kind of caught my eye over here.
Okay. I guess I don't have much issue with any of the way they did things. Joe noticed, he noticed that some of the pictures were different. Of course, the art's going to be different. Some a little more extreme than the other. I think it's interesting that even though they're still relatively close, let me see if I can find.
Right. The Aboleth for 5th edition, the artwork for it, is less of a fish and more of a squid.
Yeah, here's the second edition picture, which I always, that comes to me as like the, this is when I think of an Aboleth, right?
Yeah.
Definitely, you know, if you had the tentacles, you kind of have most aberrations, right?
It's kind of a catfish.
It looked like a catfish for real, yeah.
That's where I was trying to, yeah. I knew that I thought about that back in the day.
And then if you look back at the 5e Aboleth, that's where I think it still looks good. It still looks fairly the same. Right. I don't have a big knock on the picture. I wouldn't say not the same, but at least good. I mean, this is a quality creature that's not too far from that. It doesn't look catfishy, but its mouth looks more prominent. I always thought they had more like a sucker mouth, like a catfish. That's the way I envisioned it. But the Aboleth are pretty cool. I've never really used them except for like to scare players. Like there might be one there. I think you may have fought one time, and I think I TPK'd a party with one. So I was a little. This was later on, not early. Later on in late second edition, where I wasn't really trying to kill everybody all the time. I was like, man, that was pretty tough. Maybe I should take it easy on him.
Someone probably had to, you know, remind you. You did see that list of powers that they have. They have a lot of them,
and they were psionic and all that stuff.
Who knew? It's just a weird looking fish.
I'm sure it was pretty random, you know. I should have just gone with Aboleth. That doesn't make any sense. But that's interesting. Their ecology or place in the world, their theme is kind of they don't have one, right? They don't really belong.
Right. So if you think of, we can lean a little bit on Cthulhu to find their place, right? Mm-hmm. So in Cthulhu, they're not part of the ecosystem.
Yep.
They suborn the ecosystem. They take over. They turn people into fish people, and if we're speaking of all the aquatic aberrations, and try to turn everybody into the worship or at least sacrificial creatures to one or more of the old ones. So they come to destroy.
I've never seen. The only thing I ever seen was when they created the Mind Flayer. They had the Overmind, Forgotten Realms went pretty heavy into it. I don't remember them like actually. Well, I guess they couldn't use Cthulhu in there and his creatures.
But they do. But they're like that, right?
Yeah. In third edition, they were from what's called the Far Realm.
Right. Yeah. But what I mean is, not so much the Aboleth because they're extremely limited to the water. They can't get out, and they don't have an ability to turn you into a fish person, if I remember
correctly. They can get this mucus on you that can make you where you can only breathe water.
Okay.
That was true in second edition. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
That's what killed a lot of people. They're like, I'm not doing it, and they died before they could get any help. they couldn't get out of the
Is it a curse? Is it like
no,
a curse?
No, they put this crap on you, and all of a sudden it goes in your mouth, and you have to breathe water to live.
But you said it's
magical goop. And it doesn't go away until if I remember it correctly, somebody in the chat can correct me. I think they had to get rid of it or you had to kill it.
Oh,
it's really hard to do.
Yeah.
In second edition, they were 9-hit dice, had some powerful abilities. Yeah, that's what it is. Thank you. I think that their touch of their tentacle could touch.
Okay. So they did have that. Since the deep ones.
Yep. They can do that.
From Cthulhu. They essentially over time turn you into fish people and then you serve. Can't remember which one.
David said he thought that vinegar or alcohol could take it off. Maybe so long. You know, it's funny. I love the Beholder. I love the Mind Flayer, and I don't mind the Aboleth. And a lot of the aberrations are interesting, but I rarely use them.
Right, right. Because we weren't fond of underwater things because everything changed and you had to remember what was different. And we as players, it's annoying trying to hit anything, which is reasonable because you can't swing a sword underwater effectively.
No, not very easily. Spears were much better.
But the mind flayers, their whole thing is taking people, eating them, or making them some kind of weird servitors. Yeah.
Yeah,
so they either eat their brains or they make them servitors, or maybe sometimes both. Right.
I know the Mind Flayers had captured humans from an OC. David's, he's helping us out here. Abelisk would be surrounded by a mucus cloud. If you inhaled it, you could only breathe water. Okay. Sounds good. And the tentacles.
That's why there was a picture with a weird cloudy thing around it. That was the mucus cloud, right? Right.
Yeah. But I thought the Mind Flayers, like they had like those, they had the battle with the Githyanki, because the Githyanki were a race of humans from some world. The Mind Flayers fully enslaved, and they broke free, and Githyankis hate Mind Flayers.
And they're powerful. They're a powerful race.
Yeah, astral plane race. And then,
they're very, very psionic.
Yeah,
very
and scary. Then, what was it?
They have those silver swords.
Yes, they could cut the Githyanki had the silver swords. The Mind Flayers were kind of enigmatic, though. They had a series in second edition of three modules for both the Beholder and the Mind Flayer. I bought them, but never ran them, though I loved reading them.
Yeah, because I think they had more value beyond just the module, because they introduced more stuff for the Beholders and the Mind Flayers.
Yes.
I think they expanded, you know, the Mind Flayers to having these things in underground in their lairs. They had it, like the Overmind. That might have been more the Spelljammer thing, but they had another weird
thing. The Overmind was too. was definitely a thing in there.
And the Beholders had a weird setup, too.
They had Beholder Kin. They had a great mother who was a massive Beholder. Mm-hmm. They also had, if I remember, in third edition, they made the Lords of Madness book, which I thought was awesome. Great, great stuff. I loved all those Lords of Madness, the undead one, the dragon one. Those were really cool.
Right.
I think for me, I mined as many ideas from the Lords of Madness as I had from any of the other books in TSR. They were both very good. Even if you didn't use, if you're playing second edition, Lords of Madness is still a good pickup because the lore is interesting. And they go a little deeper into how the Beholders are different from the Mind Flayers that are different from the, what are those ones that got the beaks? Ryan, Grails. Grails were cool.
Grails.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think players considered them cool.
I had some players get jacked up by Grails. The whole drop down, snag you, paralyze you, and bring you up into the kind of the old Aliens movie, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like floating brain beat tentacle creature.
Yeah. There's another vote for Lords of Madness. If you don't have that third edition book, 3.5 book, it is worth your time just for the lore. Of course,
you remove my star?
I don't think I did. If I did, it was
purely There it is.
I didn't touch your star. I'll let your star alone, dude.
Hey, so the guys are talking about reprints and some stuff coming out of Wizards of the Coast.
Okay.
And it says, but Rod reprint. They're talking about Rod of Seven Parts. I heard I saw someone mentioning that. Is there something? I've been tired of reprints for a while, so I can understand if that's.
I like them if they have the original stuff in them, but not if they're a whole new thing.
Right. I don't know. That's why one of the things we brought up last week about that history of D&D book.
Yeah.
I would be interested to know what percentage of it is a reprinted material versus original writings on it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean like they have reprints of inner office memos and stuff like that. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's not stuff. Not, I'm talking about game material, because they keep saying they said it once or twice in the ad / video that, hey, you don't need to go buy all these expensive older versions of the game from eBay. You can buy our book for $100 and you'll have all of it instead of having to buy everything individually.
You know, if I didn't hate WotC with a burning passion, and those guys weren't so dismissive of the original D&D creators, I would be interested, because I think it's partially written by John Peterson, not just that gray-haired dude that's kind of a I'm an old guy. I was there before, but I hate them all. You know?
Right.
Yeah. The new Vecna book. Okay. They're mixing it with the Rod of Seven Parts. Okay.
Yeah. Hopefully they have the head of Vecna in there. And then everybody cuts their head off. Right. All right. So getting back to these here aberrations. So, yeah. To me, a lot of the aberrations do remind me of the Cthulhu mythos to one degree or another.
I agree. I think it's hard to get away from that. And, you know, in my game, my table, I can bring the Cthulhu mythos in, even if D&D can't say anything about it. I know, didn't Pathfinder get like an okay to use Cthulhu stuff? They had actual Cthulhu stuff, right?
I'm not sure.
I think Pathfinder 1 started adding some actual Cthulhu stuff near the end of the bestiaries.
They licensed it, you mean?
I think they did, but Bruce might know.
Well, a lot of, okay, the Cthulhu terminology.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that you can source from one of the old books is, yep. I believe, in what's the term? In the public.
Oh, right.
It's, the mm-hmm. There's a word, public something or other. You can public use, domain.
Thank so you, Patrick.
Cthulhu is public domain. So you can use it all you want. Now, there might be something that's in one of the movies that might have some IP attached to it, specific for that production house. Hmm. But if you draw it purely from the old stories and novels, yeah, it's all public domain.
Bruce says Pathfinder has some actual stuff and was written by Sandy Peterson for Pathfinder, which is public domain. Yeah, Sandy Peterson, I think he's on the poo-poo list now because, you know, he didn't kiss their butts, I think. I think that's the case, too. So, whatever.
He's on whose poo-poo list?
Well, he's not the cool. He's one of the istophobes.
Istophobes?
He's an istophobe, I believe.
Because he didn't keep his toes correctly on the line, as all great, as all people should.
Chaosium can sue over TTRPG Cthulhu material, so they must have got the okay from
well, Chaosium. Like I said, they have an IP that's associated with Cthulhu.
Yeah.
It's not, but it's their IP, maybe because of the image or some of the words or the names or the ideas, because it's beyond the public domain material. It's they're attached, but yeah.
Flint Fireforge ran Strange Eons, which had the Yellow King. Strange Eons is a Starfinder adventure path, I believe. Am I right, Flint? I believe that's the case. Yeah, I've always thought they were neat. I kind of liked when, I don't know if it was first edition or second, where it was mentioned that there was the Thieves Guild in Waterdeep that had the Xanathar as their guild leader, and he was the Beholder. Thought that was kind of cool. It's got a little overdone in all the video games and stuff, but I do think that's pretty cool.
I thought it was kind of cool, but I also thought, well, I don't know how much a beholder this particular beholder might have been an aberrant beholder, because
he's kind of weird, a weirdo. He wanted to be a part with human, but you know, that's kind of appropriate for an aberration. I mean, as long as you have a bunch of them, he was a weirdo. He was one of a kind. He doesn't have a whole bunch of beholders.
Yeah. He's a one-off that instead of wanting to eat all of the humans, he'll work with some of them.
And I think he was hated by, originally, that's true. I think Elle's right. Aberrations were just the gonzo crap that Gary could not sort into. I think so originally.
Yeah. Well, if you in some of the sources in the appendix, what's the big appendix with the, is it appendix R?
N, and then
M, appendix N.
MG, yeah.
A lot of that is old pulp sci-fi, and the monsters in there could tend to be like that too, just weird and crazy.
Two side notes. First, not a side note so much. Flint corrected me. It was Pathfinder 1E for the Strange Eons Adventure Path. And second thing, just a note for you, Joe. I have finished Peace Talks and Battlegrounds.
Oh, really?
Battlegrounds is the top three book for me.
Oh yeah, it was good.
I loved it. It reminded me of the Red Court situation in what was that one? Anyway, it's a top three of the Dresden Files. Side comment.
What we'll have to talk about the big thing that happens in there. I mean, there's a lot of big things, but there is one really big thing that happens.
There's one
in
really
there.
Big thing that I kind of hated, but I saw it coming.
Yeah,
it was telegraphed, I think.
Yeah.
Which he's good at, but yeah, I don't know. I like them. They're cool. I just can't get myself to use them that much, partially because I had this thing in the back of my mind that beholders will just annihilate a party. that beholders will have, party would have no chance against a beholder. And that's not true.
Mid to low, definitely low.
Yes. Even eighth level characters, boy, you'd be asking a lot for an eighth level party to beat a
lot of saving throws.
Lots of saving throws. You better have saving throws. You better have lots of cloaks of protection plus three.
How many I-beams? 10?
Yeah.
10, something like that, depending on the version. And they can only
get so many at a time, but, you know, I don't really use that when I play. My beholders can fire whatever. I just roll randomly.
Yeah, they're...
They fire. Thing goes they fire whatever I want them to fire. I don't give a crap about that.
And they'll shut down the wizard by signing their anti-magic ray on them.
That's Joe loves that part.
They don't even need to gank them with the death... cause light wounds or cause serious wounds or death.
Disintegrate? Rate. Nah.
Disintegrate? None of that.
Shut him down. Kill the rest of the
party. Anti-magic? Yeah.
Charm monster. Go ahead and charm the fighter. Mm-hmm. Would you please kill this wizard? Thank you. And then, you know, blast him. We're dealt with 27 rays. I guess you have to be careful, though. You have to be careful with that as a DM. I mean, probably some rules you should probably be a little more careful with. But Mind Flayer, I used to like them quite a bit early on. I love the
idea. They can wreck a party, too.
Oh, Sonic Blast could stun everybody.
Yeah, yeah. It'd
be everybody. Game over.
And if you happen to have a Sonic character in your party, it wrecks you even more.
Mm-hmm. I think the first time, that might have been the Mind Flayer I was thinking about. And you might have been a part of that. Well, the first time I played it, I Sonic Blasted, and then I realized I just stunned the whole party.
Yeah.
Like, and I was like, how long? Like 2d4 turns. I'm like, what?
That means you're dead.
That means you're all dead.
Because it'll go up to you, stick its tentacle in your noggin, and suck your brain out over and over again.
Yeah. I can't remember how long it was. It was more than enough time for him to eat everybody's head. Even if he took like the four full rounds to eat everybody, he could easily do it. Now, he may not be hungry enough to eat them all, so he could have maybe just controlled your brain and made you a slave and sold you to the drow auction. I'm sure you could do that. Yeah, I don't know.
Because they are part of that.
Yeah.
Depending on what you read.
Any other examples you've used or seen used that you thought were pretty cool when using aberrations in a game? Was there a situation where you thought, man, that was really awesome? I can remember one experience we had, but it wasn't D&D. It was Hyperborea we played not too long ago. Do you remember the statue room with the frog statue that got all weird?
I do remember it, but I don't remember the details. Which is why when you ask that question in these things, it always kills me because
I know
all of, you fight 50 million monsters, they all become one big glob.
Yeah. I've done the, I'm trying to remember.
Okay. I remember one of the cooler things, and it was, you know, short duration. Yeah. So you always get the experienced players to blow up the gas bore.
Yes.
It's easy to hook them into it. Oh, that's a big one. Kill it. Boom. Mm-hmm. And half the party's dead.
Put a little treasure.
It's still an explosion.
Yeah. I think the gas spore is a plant creature. I don't think it's an aberration.
No.
It just happens to that's probably a Gygax gotcha creature.
Yeah.
So
well, are mimics aberrations? Mimics in their ilk?
That's a good question. Let us check.
It would make sense if they were.
It would make sense. Let me do a quick
check. If they're not, they're dumb.
They should be. We're going to see if a mimic is an aberration. Mimicolipod. Gazers. Wow. Well, shoot. Sorry, guys. Let me go to a list I can find a lot faster. Says, in theory... Dang, dude, I can't even find them. It's such a long list. Oh, that's fourth edition. That doesn't count.
No.
In third edition, the answer is yes. Large aberrations, correct.
Right.
Yes.
And then aren't there a couple of other kind of, there are beholder-looking things that can suck you in and make you think that they're beholders and make you run?
Spectators are lawful neutral.
But they only have two.
Four. Four rays. Four? But they are literally guardians of treasures. They're right. Summoned to guardian. Back in second edition, they're summoned from first edition, the Plane of Nirvana, or Mechanus, if you're second edition. They were brought. They're very lawful. They would do exactly what they're told. And they'll talk to you. Like if you come in, they're very intelligent. As long as they don't give away anything, the treasure hoard, you know, if they either give away what's in the treasure or in the chest, they can't do that. But, like, you know, I had a party one time. I think you were in it. We were playing.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he was like, hey, man, yeah. He goes, no, you can't have that. And they go, how come? Because I'll have to kill you. I don't want to do that. Because he's not really like, I'm not out to fight you, but...
They're not bloodthirsty.
Yeah, I will shoot you in the face hole.
And they're not robot automaton.
No, things. They're very intelligent. They're just from the plane of Nirvana, but they're an aberration type too. I like the Spectators. Eye of the Deep. Yeah, isn't that an under Flint Fire Forge brings one out of left field? Eye of the Deep. That was an underwater beholder, right?
Right, and a lot. That's the thing. A lot of Cthulhu stuff is sea, in the sea, and under the sea, under the sea. So a lot of it is.
Flady makes a good point. He says Randy talks about treasure like he lets him have it. Yeah, I mean, I try to make it look good on the podcast, but
he's faking it.
Let's be honest. If they killed the Spectator, there's nothing in the treasure. It left years ago. Something came in from the astral plane and stole it when the Spectator wasn't looking. Yes. Yeah. I have a.
Yeah. Was that in Big Trouble, Little China, Randy, the tiny fake beholder? I mean,
he seemed more like
a familiar
or a guard dog. He could see through his eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
A spectator, if I remember correctly.
In a small.
The Spectator's about, you know, foot and a half, 2 foot.
I'm talking about the Big Trouble, Little China thing was more, more like a grapefruit, maybe a little bigger.
Yeah, I think they were smaller, but they were dangerous. I do have, Bruce is talking about board games that have four beholders. I have got about 9 or 10 beholder figures that I have gotten, like all of a sudden a whole bunch of them. And I got a chunk of them from Dungeon of the Mad Mage from a couple years back. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Yes, Bruce has got the right of it. Randy dangles the treasure in front of them, but the treasure is barely worth the threadbare couch that was pushed into the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. Yeah, that's basically it. That's a good theme. Yeah. Good job. You defeated the beholder. You defeated his Spectator Guardian. Here's your plus one book.
Right.
Plus one to what? To reading.
To reading.
Good job. You have great treasure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And 50 copper. Don't spend it all in one place. Darth, why does there have to mean to be an underwater version of the beholder? They don't follow the laws of life and other creatures in the prime plane. Yeah, but why not? If your characters are going to go in the water, you might as well bring some beholders around.
Might as well.
Oh, he's talking.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to keep up with Bruce, too. He says, find a copy of Big Trouble in Little China board game. You get really good modern figures, and you get, okay. All right, dude. Yeah. What's Al saying?
Bruce, at least Randy doesn't give them a cart full of treasure, then make them lose it in a dragon cave.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
No, but this is what you would do.
But now that you mention that, let me write that down real quick.
We can mention something called the King of the Air Elementals.
Oh, that was the best. That was the best.
Or any creature that demands your magic items before they will let you live.
Now. Oh, Patrick says he owns the board game. I will try it out. The King of the Air, Wind Elementals. This was basic D&D, our first little red booklet. Now, to be fair, I was giving them truckloads of treasure. Now, every time you go in that room, you had to lose a piece of treasure, though. There was no fighting. There was no chance to fight. You were slammed against the wall. You could do nothing, and you had to give up a magic item to get out of the room.
That's when Randy realized he gave us too much crap.
I did.
Or he believed that. Not necessarily that it was true.
You had too much stuff.
No, never. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So Elle is reminding us that Blackwall did that to us. Kind of. So.
Oh, we got screwed this week.
That wasn't Blackwall screwing us over.
No, we screwed ourselves.
That was more some player decisions that we could have done a little better.
Do we? Yeah, mine and Joe's, I think our idea to have those drakes rush out, we should have rethought that. That wasn't as good. It sounded fun, but that just put us on the crap list. Maybe. I thought that was a bad move. In hindsight, while we were doing it, it was very fun.
Yeah.
Flint says, no character willingly wants to go in the water. That's DM shenanigans. Really? That's weird. I always thought they liked it in there.
We don't want to go in the water. The adventure's in the water. So you got to go in the water.
We're going back to town. Good. Let's go play basketball.
Can the adventure be not be in the water? No, the adventure's in the water.
No, that's where you're going. You see the rails? They go right into the ocean. Get on.
I need my life preserver. Or those little things you put around your arms.
Yeah.
Your low life preservers
too.
Your
floaties. Your little floaties.
Little floaties. Yeah, I need my floaties.
Your wizard cap floaties on you. I always liked, I remember I had this, and I don't know, Joe, if you played in this encounter. It was more of a glorified encounter. But during the Seven Spheres campaign, 3.5, I had them encounter a mind flayer. Maybe it was a couple of them. And one of them was a seventh level monk mind flayer. That was awesome. Flurry of tentacles. So good. They loved it. Oh, that reminds, that's the one I remember. But it was a heck of a fight.
That was some shenanigans right there.
Yeah, we had a big Goliath fighter who was a BA. Remember Greg's character, Seeker? And that's when I first bubbled him. Because there was also a magic user, Mind Flayer. No, he just used Old Luke's Sphere and put him in there for the whole fight.
Oh, yeah. That's one of my favorite spells as a spellcaster. Telekinetic Sphere. But then again, one of the problems with these spells is they offer a saving throw. And then you have folks like Randy who will put things in there that always make their saving throws.
I don't know if that happens. Is it because I roll behind the screen?
You also like monsters, a lot of monsters with spell resistance.
Yeah, that's usually the case. I don't really cheat. Joe knows I'm most now these days. I like to have my screen out. I roll it in the open. Whatever happens, happens. But even back in the day, I wasn't much for cheating. Not for my
No.
If I cheated, it would. And I'm not saying I never fudged, but I always fudged in the error of the players. Doesn't make it right, but I did. If I fudged, and I bet I can count on one hand how many times I did that since I was 12. And I've given that up now. I gave it up for Lent years ago. Bruce has got a good idea here. He says, at Biggest Geekus, just set your next adventure at sea in a chain of island-hopping pieces. I have that. Let them try to be pirates for a few weeks, then shove them into the abyss, complete with Sandy Peterson.
You know, creative use of spells, you know, some DMs would say that there's no saving throw because the spell itself doesn't say there's a saving throw. But the spell also, its normal usage isn't as an attack. So some DMs would just say, well, you're using it on somebody, so I think they need a saving throw.
Well, even if you don't, you can use L's logic. I could say, if you have a strong constitution, you cough that water right up.
Yeah.
I mean, how much water can you put in someone's throat? Only enough to fill up, then there's no more room. So... But it is magic. Larry Elliott says, the first ever game, 13th Age, and Randy had us near a river attacked by bees, and he looks at me and says, what do you do? He jumped in the water and floated down the river and got away from the bees. No one told me to stay out of the water.
Right. Well, it's one thing to swim. It's another thing to have your whole adventure be underwater.
I don't think it's bad for, like, if you're protecting a coastal town from Sahuagin attacks, and, you know, you got, look, there's a whole bunch of them. They keep raiding. We've kicked their face in, but we need to take it to them so they don't come back a few months later. And you're high enough level. And I think it's really fun when characters are about 9th or 10th level because then they have the resources to get in there themselves, though it's not infinite. And the wizard
has to, easy.
And the wizard has to be careful.
Yeah.
And it's not easy. Now, you would love to have, like, freedom of movement's a great spell then. Then your fighters can kick butt and take names. Yeah. So what are they? Was that always called freedom of movement, even back in first edition? Do you recall, Joe?
I that's the one that I remember.
I don't even know if there was a spell. Was it an item?
No, it was an item. Yeah. So I don't think it was originally a spell, but then for some reason, those guys in D&D, I don't know where it started, whether it was TSR or Wizards of the Coast. They think that everything that's magical must be a spell. So a magic item can't have a unique thing that doesn't mimic a spell. It does its own thing.
Mm.
And you should be able to put any spell in any item. It's kind of weird.
L asked, didn't they have a PC race that is an aberration?
Probably.
I feel like they had in third edition or Pathfinder.
Oh, Pathfinder for sure.
They had a sorcerer that had an aberration legacy. I wouldn't be shocked, dude. Third edition and Pathfinder, man, they had so many races. It could have been anything. I don't know.
I mean, they had undead.
Yeah, they had some the
Dampier. Yeah.
And they had like the Genasi, which were like, oh no, Warforged was
elemental.
Warforged was Eberron.
And it was a construct. That's a construct.
Construct.
That's not an aberration.
but he was pretty busted too.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they had the Thrycreen, which was an insect.
Yeah.
I don't think that's an aberration.
I kind of hated that race as a class for PC.
Thrycreen Ranger.
They were stupid good.
Yeah.
Stupid good. Four arms and four weapons. Oh, thank you. Iron Man said it. Ring of free action.
Yeah, ring of free action. It was a ring.
Yeah.
Originally just a ring, and then they had to make it into a spell.
Yeah. It's
freedom of movement. I think they called it freedom of movement at some point.
Third edition.
Yeah.
Okay, what about some alternate takes here, bud? You got any ideas for... I got a couple.
All right.
An alternate take for an aberration is how you could use them differently.
So what I thought would be interesting is think of it's more of a background thing, not necessarily how you would, you wouldn't necessarily change them in any way.
Okay.
But use them like in Hellraiser.
Ooh.
Because in Hellraiser, they summoned all kinds of weirdo things. And the instead of having demons and devils and aberrations, we'll just have aberrations. They're bad enough.
Yes, they are. And they could be from a realm that you could summon them to, yeah.
Right. And they had in Hellraiser, that box had a seductive quality to it, right? Mm-hmm. It sucked you in. And I could see a creature that might look attractive from a perspective.
Sure.
And then it turns, and then you see all of the demon stuff coming out of its back.
Right, right.
And now it's too late. There's even a more modern episode of one of those Twilight Zone type shows.
Yeah.
Where at the very beginning, you see a guy drive off a cliff with his wife.
Hmm.
He's like, I can't take this anymore. And he drives him off a cliff.
Oh, wow.
Then what you end up finding out is there's these female, I don't know if they're aliens or demons or whatever. They're horrendously awful looking.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And smell bad. And if you kiss them, it tastes bad. Mm-hmm. It's awful, right? But when they first present themselves to a man, they look like a model, right?
Yeah.
And that the illusion never changes, but eventually the guy figures it out in some kind of way.
Gotcha.
And they're always attracted to like geniuses.
Sure.
So, but yeah, so
that could be cool.
That could be a type. Yeah.
You could replace demons. Yeah. I think that would not be a problem. Ooh, I'm going to throw L's up here. He said Venom symbiote. That would be interesting.
That would be an aberration.
Yeah. And what if you could use aberrations that way in a world where they merge with people, and depending on your personality, you might be a mind flayer. Imagine if you could connect it to like being super obese, you turn into a big round beholder. Or, I mean, it could be, that's kind of cool. Well, that's not a bad idea.
Right.
I went kind of basic on one of mine. I had two alternate takes. One of them was, what if aberrations were experiments that a cabal of dark sorcerers did trying to create a new life? And they're nothing but just, these experiments are like from ancient sorceries. No one can reproduce them. There's only so many aberrations that have been made. And so there's a direct number, and you got to try to kill them off. That'd be kind of
cool.
That'd be a kind of an extermination campaign, trying to destroy these. Like maybe someone freed them from some vault where these dark sorcerers, you know, where all their stuff been pushed back, and now they get free, and you got to kind of fight them back. That could be fun.
And as a twist, you can have like there's one left, and that one aberration is actually a merging of one of those aberrations and one of those sorcerers.
Oh yeah, you could add the symbiote twist.
They're the one that got away.
Yeah,
you could have a little sequel module where they're summoning them again.
Yeah.
The other thing, one of the other things I thought about was, what if aberrations were the only monsters you had to deal with?
Okay.
Instead of having the whole, you know,
gamut of ogres,
gamut of mythological beasts. All of the monsters are just weird, tentacled, sloppy, blobby things.
Yeah. Your world could be too close, planar-wise, to a Cthulhu Old One realm. Your world could have had just overrun, kind of like in Shadowrun. What were those creatures called that caused the whole world to go hide in the deep caverns for...
Oh, I know what you're talking about, but I can't remember the name of them.
Yeah, Patrick Demol probably knows. Earth Dawn.
Earth Dawn.
They were called, but yeah, that you could do a whole Earth Dawn type thing where that's where all you have are these aberrations. And it can be really interesting if, like, you have to have a subsistence. The horrors. Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Patrick. The horrors. What if they also, you know, fed? So you have these normal animals, and you got to protect them from these beasts and creatures. And they could be all over the place. They can be a serious fight all the time.
Right.
Yep. Flint says you could have the Abelus and Ale Tavern. Hopefully there's... Could have it right by the seaside. Oh, right by the seaside. And the actual proprietor is an Abelith. Pull a Forgotten Realms spin on that.
Yeah.
It's a different one. Oh, go ahead.
Joe, we had normal animals turn into monsters when Magicka reappeared. Cool. Thus, why we ate orcs. Ate? Maybe you mean hate. Or some other word with an A, T, and E in it. Because eating orcs just does not sound appetizing.
No, but, I mean, it may be that they...
Oh, the animals went away. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, no. No more steak.
Oh, Iron Man brought back a sore spot. Did you guys leave Peter behind in Horde Wars? Oh, he did. He's going to be sold. He's going to be a slave for them.
You know, it's an old school. It's an old school move. You know, screw the hirelings, you know.
Let's hope it doesn't get back to Grimstead that we did that.
We might, you know, honestly, though, we might have to have our characters go rescue Peter if it's even possible. They probably killed him by now.
They've killed him or they've, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this is interesting. Flint says, what if a whole city was turned into aberrations, like a spell? I think he meant a spell plague. Yeah, there could be a spells go crazy.
That's a very, very Cthulhu type thing, because there's a couple of stories, or yeah. It seemed like every other story that we would read, me and the wife would read, it started out in some seaside town or something like that, lake town, whatever, island nearby, anything to do with sailors or the ocean.
Right.
And at some point, you're just waiting for the deep ones to pop out. Or at some point during the story, the book is open and the process starts. Yeah. Right. And it usually doesn't involve going too far inland, because these guys are connected to the ocean. So they don't go too far, but the coastal cities, they just get ganked.
Yes. I had another one. Says, what if mind flayers, how did I describe it? I was like, no, hold on, let me take a look at it. This, I thought of just when we got on, so I'm trying to read it again. What if the mind flayers, what if use the old ones, like the Cthulhu type elder gods, they're trapped in the far realm or some dark realm, and they can't get out, but they can send their seed in there. And what their seed does, as the mind flayers and aberrations start to multiply, if they're members can multiply through some weird thing, not just have sex and have babies, that if enough of them come into existence in the world, one of the old ones can slip through.
Right. That's kind of some of the things that would, the shenanigans that would be going on in the old stories. Either you'd either have to have some sort of astronomical convergence of some kind, one of the guys finding a book and reading the words, or enough of a presence.
Yeah. I think our man brings a good point. He says, too bad there isn't a decent sanity mechanic in the game. If I were going to run a campaign where an old one was trying to break through by filling the world with aberrations, I would have to find some sanity mechanic. I would probably make it slow building. I would probably have the mind flayers be the lawful leaders of this aberration insurgence, and maybe they have to go so far as to use people in some ritual to turn them into creatures, but maybe it has to be a very specific thing so the players can always be a thorn in their side. I am turning my camera off periodically because I am answering a text, but I am still here. I have to keep this up. So,
right.
Go ahead, Joe.
I think to Arnman's, Arnman makes a comment over here. I don't know if you just said it. Too bad there isn't a decent sanity mechanic in D&D. I really don't think it would be that hard to implement. But I, what I wouldn't want is for you to have a sanity stat. Well, instead, mm-hmm. I think it would be better if you just had effects that made characters go slowly insane, kind of like something like the mummy rot, where you would slowly accrue penalties, and if you didn't get it removed within a certain amount of time, you could you would rot away, become a mummy, or something like that. But with sanity, you could have different effects that just, you know, all of these insanity mechanics just stack on each other.
What did Ravenloft do? Like the powers check you would make to be enticed by the powers. What if you had you had a little chart that every time you encountered a new aberration, you had to make a saving throw. Every time you fought, mm-hmm. make all these different things, and that would go up. Now, depending on your level, difference amount of, let's use something from Legend of the Five Rings, taint mm-hmm. of the Far Realm would build up. And if it ever equaled or surpassed your level or equaled or surpassed your intelligence modifier, kind of like what L's saying, then you would go under. Yes, like a Ravenloft corruption types thing. Exactly, L. And we could use it in terms of insanity, yeah.
Right. There's a couple of ways you can do it.
L says, Randy could just give treasure. Everyone would go crazy wondering what he's doing.
Where? What have you done with Randy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Another idea I had is about the origin. So instead of necessarily they're from someplace, a far realm or from the abyss or whatever, mm-hmm. they are formed by leftover bits of magic that have no purpose of their own. So when you cast a spell, there's nothing that the players can use, but the DM right. can use it to make an aberration.
Or you could have a player wizard cast a spell. And like if you've got a game where he's making a check, or you just want to make him a check because of where he's at, he makes some spell check, some intelligence check. And if he fails, maybe intelligence or lower, make it easy. But if the PC ever fails, then it happens when he casts Fireball. Some piece of magic goes crazy on the side. He doesn't notice this. A little glop of goo lands in the forest right beside where he's burning all the ogres down. No one sees it. And then it grows to become, mm-hmm. you mm-hmm. know, some sort of like,
or you as the DM can just say, yeah, that's what happened.
That's right. You could. You could just you don't. Could be, I mean, I wouldn't do it every time you cast spells.
No.
Unless something's building.
Yeah.
If you're going to do a big campaign thing where as it gets going, there's some sort of magical resonance where that energy is getting more crazy, a wild magic type zone, and it becomes more common. And that so would
that be cool. could, a lot of people like to have an element of danger with magic.
Yeah.
And that would be a cool way to do it without necessarily introducing any kind of weird mechanics. You don't even necessarily need to have the saving throw happen.
No, you could just build it up. And you talk about high level wizards being too powerful. If by the time you get to 17th level, this energy is going crazy, or every time you cast a spell, you create a fully formed beholder or a fully
somewhere. Formed,
somewhere.
Not necessarily right there, but
the
just
wizard
somewhere.
Will be like, I literally can't cast spells unless it's desperate. So your right. wizards won't be, you know, defeating every encounter with their high level 7th and 8th level spells. They'll be like, oh crap, I can't even cast
have
magic.
Some way of negating
yes
that leak.
Yeah.
At least to some degree.
That could be a big campaign ender. That's yeah. pretty cool. I like that. Dar says he's of the mind that all beholders are mage creations, usually made to protect something. I like the idea of that, but beholders tend to turn on the mages that create them very quickly.
Yeah, they're really powerful.
They're honestly yeah. As a creature, a solo, if he's a solo mage, it would be hard to push. It'd be hard to push a beholder around.
Yeah, because beholders, a lone wizard, I don't know what level.
Are you eyeballing me, boy? Yeah, I am eyeballing you.
Yeah. Yeah, guess what? Now, I'm eyeballing you. You can't cast any magic.
You're a normal 9th level human with 15 hit points. I'm going to finish that in 2 bites. So, yeah. Yeah, dude. My wand, the wizard would be like, ugh.
It's like a golem. The way that golems are, yeah. especially in 3rd edition, magic doesn't affect them at all. They have really strong resistance. They don't even, I don't know how much they carry over the old, these spells affect them and most of the other ones don't kind of deal.
I mean, you can put walls up, but like an iron, you put an iron wall up. We put a wall of force up that would probably hold most of them at bay. But like a wall of iron, I would imagine Iron Golem would knock it right over.
Well, yeah, but in the old game also, a lot of them, you could lose control of them. Not really all that hard to lose control of your Golem. Yep. So they seemed like, oh, yeah, they're really tough guardians that you can lose control of, that your magic doesn't affect, that can squish you into little mage paste without much effort. Why would you want that around? Unless you put it deep in a hole somewhere to guard stuff that you probably don't want to ever see again. But yeah.
Armin says he would like the sanity mechanic. Just saying the PC is going crazy is not enough. There should be a lingering, growing impact to the character, maybe a percent of hit points that won't heal. You could do whatever you like. It could be an access to a... It could be a penalty to a fighter's attack roll. It could be a hit point loss. It could be a cleric.
Penalties and will saves. There's no telling.
A cleric could lose access to high-level spells because he's building up a separation from him and his deity. You could say that aberrations are separating his connection. You could do lots.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to have it be just some thing that you write on the character sheet, character slowly going crazy, that doesn't do anything, like hit point loss till you get to zero. You can make it have effects. So when you get a little bit of insanity, maybe you even give them an insanity. You make them compulsive, obsessive compulsive for some particular thing.
Yeah.
And which with a good player is not hard to do. Because they can, you say, you have this condition now, and it gives you these kinds of penalties. And then they can build on each other over time with the especially when the DM is always throwing mind-bending monsters at you.
Yeah. And it could be something akin to a confusion spell, says David Will. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, what if it was a permanent confusion spell?
Oh, that would be horrible. You couldn't adventure, dude. They couldn't take you. No way.
No, because you never know what you're going to do.
No, you could just turn around and blast somebody.
I mean, you know that you have like four things you can do, but most of it is bad.
And honestly, it'd be worse on the fighter than the wizard. I don't believe you can cast a spell when you're confused, can you, in first edition? You don't cast
spells. There's an act normally.
But there's not one. But if you turn on your party or do something crazy, it's not cast a spell. It's like attack or stand.
Yeah, you attack with your weapon in hand kind of deal.
So your wizard, so your fighter would be the worst to have that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he might kill somebody in one swing. Yeah, true. Where your wizard bonking somebody on the head with their staff is probably not going to kill them.
Right.
Might break his hand. Oh, anything else you can think of with aberrations, Joe? Or are you ready to?
Probably could be if we hemmed and hawed for a little while, I'd think of something else. But for right now, I think that's a good diatribe.
Why don't you tell them to do the things, man?
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And I can say it like that. I'm from Indiana. Subscribe, like, share, hit the bell notification, share with your friends and enemies, tell all the folks about Biggest Geekus.
Yeah.
Make comments. Come in here live when you can. If you can't, throw some comments down on the video after the fact.
Bruce said something that I'm sure is funny, but you're going to have to explain it to me because I don't know who he is. The heroes find a tunnel filled with angry voice. The tunnel ends in a lurching observation post. The players realize they have stumbled into a room watching Malcolm McDowell go through life. Who's Malcolm McDowell?
Roddy McDowell's brother. He's an actor.
Oh, I think I may know him.
But I don't know. I don't know what this is referring to.
Right.
He was in Clockwork Orange. Malcolm McDowell.
Darth makes an interesting point. I don't know. A crazy mage with a staff of power could be trouble if confused. What happens if he breaks it?
The confusion spell gives a menu of four things that they can do. Now, it's possible if they have a staff of power in their hands and they're smacking people with it, it could break, but that would be the DM DM shenanigans. Oh.
I'm sorry. I got to go dark for a second.
So, yeah, Bruce says he just likes Malcolm McDowell. We're just trying to square up what you were saying about the... Oh, you just want Malcolm McDowell to be at the end of that little rainbow there because you like him. Gotcha. Oh, yeah, he was also in an episode of, at least one episode, or one of the Star Trek movies. One of the older Star Trek movies.
Sorry, I forgot.
You didn't give him
any
medicine either?
No.
Oh, yeah, you know, John Malkovich. I forgot how that, I never saw the Being John Malkovich movie. But I imagine there was something. Ella's saying that little thing about walking through a tunnel into a room with Malcolm McDowell.
Oh,
on life. That's a being John Malkovich plot, or the
gotcha
being John Malkovich plot.
Yep.
There was an actress that did a weird movie like that too. Yeah, being John Malkovich, and then I can't remember her name.
I've never seen it, but I have heard of it.
Yeah.
All right. Why don't we do a short little discussion on our idea, our current idea that we're pretty excited about for Mudsword, a setting.
Sure.
We have kind of an idea for I jokingly call it a two-world order. We're going to have two worlds, Zeros and Hymir. Zeros is going to be a realm that's fairly quasi-medieval, classic sort of D&D. I have backtracked. I've decided that I am going to use clerics, and I'm going to use clerics with a vengeance. I'm going to have a lot of religious overtones. I'm going to have one particular religion that's kind of putting the press on and starting to kind of not overtake the world, but have an undue influence on the world. That's the Zeros world. Joe, how would you describe Hymir?
Hymir, as far as that goes, is a more typical game world where you have a pantheon of gods.
Mm-hmm.
Although I have watched a few YouTube videos while I'm sitting with my sick dog,
mm-hmm.
About how to properly do pantheons. And it's some stuff that I've said myself. So it wasn't too surprising where these folks were like, yeah, D&D doesn't do pantheons very well, because a lot of times you still have somebody saying you should worship, even players, you should worship Odin because Odin's great and nobody else. Well, that's not the way a pantheon works. That's not the way polytheism works. Polytheism is more like, hey, we revere all or most all the gods, right? You might have a cult with shenanigans running around, right? A death cult or whatever.
Right.
But for the most part, a polytheistic type of world, you would at least be cognizant of and likely honor most of them in some kind of way, at least so that they would not bother you. So that would be the atmosphere religious atmosphere in my part of the setting.
Yeah. David Gwill says, I don't need adventuring clerics for all that. Yeah, but I think I'm going to have some, but I may not call them clerics. So I'm going to have Templars. I got a little inspired by David's Dungeons and Delvers. Something about the way he wrote it, I don't know what it was, but I'm kind of inspired to let paladins be something separate from just dedicated to a particular deity. I may have paladins be these ultimate champions of good that make a vow that forces them to act a certain way. And they may or may not be faithful to a particular religion, but they are focused on doing orderly good to the world.
Right.
And the Lohas faith, which is the one that's going to be dominant, he is going to be a good deity, at least in theory. And he's in a variety of different sects and denominations that are going to do different things. I think it's going to be really interesting to explore that. And I told Joe beforehand, I'm almost envisioning that maybe it's oppressive in some regions where some of the cults that were in my world fled to Joe's.
You're going to cause trouble there.
Yeah, or maybe they're good. Maybe they're a good cult that Lohas is just oppressing because they don't want any competition. Because I'm not going to have, there will be some sects of the Lohas religion that won't be such nice people. You know, they're not particularly evil directly, but they're not really good. So.
Gotcha. Yeah. So Hymir is mm-hmm. So how about we set up so we make sure that everybody understands what sure. we mean.
Yeah.
So in the setting, you have two worlds, mm-hmm. and the two worlds are actually visible to each other.
Yes.
Right.
Almost like a moon and earth, yeah.
Right, but much bigger. Now, we aren't going to worry about what kind of atmospheric or geological effects that large of a mass next to another large mass would have.
Because no, we're not going to get into astronomy.
No. It's a magical thing. So the two worlds are within sight of each other and are associated with each other in some mysterious way. So Hymir is the world that I'm developing. Mm-hmm. And on it, it's more of a swords and sorcery type setting.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going more of a throwback than anything else. So it's going to be polytheistic environment. You're going to likely have some sorts of cults running around trying to murder people. What's that?
Twin planets, like...
Iskandar and Gamelon.
Iskandar and Gamelon. I don't know what they are, I'm not familiar with that. I'm sure it's something cool. I'm about to Google. Continue, Joe.
All right. So, and in this setting, the planet is ancient and has lots of places for the players to explore and uncover long-lost knowledge, places where people used to live, perhaps old temples, old gods that if you open up the temple, they might start causing problems.
Yep.
So the idea is that there are civilization, but it's spread out.
Mm-hmm.
Not too many cosmopolitan towns, mm-hmm. and most larger settlements are going to be fairly decaying and corrupt.
Yeah. Mine are going to be a little more, there will probably be a Greyhawk city or Waterdeep-like city. There will be other fairly large cities and small kingdoms, but there will also be a swath of places that are yet to be tamed. And Lohas will have a presence in almost all the major cities. It's not like every city is going to be completely religiously overbearing, but there will be some that will be. And some will just honor him and move on. But you'll be in most of the places where Lohas has a significant influence, there will be none or very few other deities like legally worshipped. So, you know, they're pushing. And I have some background reasons as to why Lohas is doing this, because he considers himself good, and in many ways he is. He is a more orderly than he is good, though. He's trying to bring order to the world. And we're going to have some I was just thinking, we might have connective tissue where magic could take you from one planet to the other by just spells. But we also have an idea for a place that could exist in both worlds, and it'd be a way that normal people could conceivably travel from Zeros to Hymir without having
a nexus.
And right now we're working on the idea of we'll wait. We'll talk about it more later. It's not as fantastical in some ways.
No, it's not a bad, it's not something terribly inventive. It's been in many books that I've read, but we're borrowing it. And, you know, if you...
Lady confirmed, Star Blazers. I believe that's a
cartoon. I've heard of that, but I don't know anything about it.
An American animated television series adapted from Japanese anime.
Oh, okay.
Cool.
So, yeah. So, the idea is, or what I was just getting ready to say is, it's going to be a mystery, but mm-hmm. I wonder how many mysteries can we have in the campaign world that mm-hmm. once it's not a mystery anymore, I mean, if we ever print it out,
yes,
it's not going to be a mystery.
Well, some
at least not to the DM.
I think we'll take the 13th Age approach. We'll say, here's what we think it is, but it could be. Like, we might have sidebars where it could be this or this. Or Joe thinks this would be better. Randy thinks this would be cool.
I'm a real fan of hitting highlights with setting material.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the rumors and gossip part where these people over here believe it this way, or these are the different things that people say this means, or the prince of this town or this of this kingdom, who is he really? And here are some ideas, and you can run with one of them.
Yeah, I've got to work on my writing, because I think some people said that I was a couple of reviews of what was the adventure I wrote? Tygon's Falls.
Yeah.
Said that I was a little wordy in the background, but I was trying to set up something in the future. But that's probably, from me, you'll probably get a little more wordy stuff.
Yeah. Mine will be more gazetteer style.
Yeah.
Older gazetteer style.
I'm going to try to do that too, but I might be a little more. This is what I think this is.
So David will suggest leave some blank areas and or omit details at the gym, fill it in. That'll be really feasible with my world because there's going to be lots of wilderness. And it's a lot of bad lands where if you go in there, it's very dangerous. Where there is civilization, the monsters tend to stay away because it's you know, they want easy prey. Mm-hmm. And there's walls and people with swords are like, that's hard. I'm gonna go over here where, you know, there's just some, you know, shack and there's nobody guarding it, and I'm gonna eat all the nice farmers in there who, you know, fatten themselves up on cows and pigs.
And I am gonna have
and then eat the cows and pigs.
Yeah. It's gonna be like the Wild West. Where some people are expanding into a certain direction. So there'll be an area of my world that will be much more similar to Hymir in that it's unknown. Mm-hmm. But there'll be a large chunk of the planet that will be a little more civilized.
Right. So I'm imagining my world is a lot more like a Thundar world.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Not precisely, is more like Conan's world, or perhaps John Carter of Mars, the Mars of that. Because in that, you have cities, and they're civilized, but there's lots of wasteland, and there's lots of creatures out there that are dangerous to cross, even for John Carter. There's been some, sure. You know, especially if his weapons have been taken from him and he's on the run.
Aren't those white apes really dangerous?
Yeah, they were. Super. Although, you know, he could jump up and punch him in the jaw. And
knock. Oh, could he at the end? I didn't remember.
Well, he did that. Actually, he did that with the Green Martians.
Yeah, the Green Martians. I don't know about the White Apes.
White Apes are bigger than the Green Martians.
Yeah, I'm not sure he could punch them. Oh, he could, but I don't know if he'd kill them.
Right. I'm pretty sure he needed a weapon.
Whereas my world, and I'm not saying this, please don't anybody take it this way, will be more Greyhawk-ish or Forgotten Realms-ish. I say Greyhawk because it won't be as magic crazy as the realms for sure. As you know, there won't be any magic items for adventurers to find, just for the NPCs to have.
Right.
And the monsters to have until the PCs kill them. Then they won't have them anymore.
Yeah, they only work in the hands of the monster.
Correct. Right? So we'll not be
monster keyed magic items. Mm-hmm.
So it might be super magical, just the PCs can never get any of it. That'll be a fun world. Why is Hymir so bloated with adventurers? Because Zero sucks, dude.
Yeah, it's so way too orderly. All the monsters have been killed.
Yes.
No adventure here.
All you can do is...
Adventure might be illegal.
It might be illegal. Do not have fun. Do not go out and fight things. Do not explore.
Right.
So that's kind of the big overview. I don't know if I have anything else I want to share. I've got a lot in my mind. I need to get into my computer and write it down. So
yeah, I'm vacillating on. I had that content last week about races, and after I had that, I was thinking, well, maybe I can just use slightly different versions of the older races.
I'm very intrigued by what you said, though. I actually like what you said about the races, and I've talked a little bit off air about it, and I'm not ready to talk about it yet because I don't know what I'm even thinking.
Yeah,
I want some kind of. That's where we're going to have some connectivity in the world. I don't want us to have like fully different PC races, if that makes sense. I want them to be the same in both worlds. Yeah. All right. That's a good one, Al. Randy's magic items are only usable by aberrations.
You got to have some goop to make them things work.
You do, man. They're goop activated ectoplasm. Goop activated swords.
Yeah.
Form of a goop ball, shape of a booger. All right.
As the goop trademark.
All right. All right. I think you got anything else you want to share? I'm not ready. I literally don't have anything.
I just want to say we had some bumpy road this weekend with Big Geek Emporium that we resolved. Mm-hmm. Big Geek Con 2, still tickets are on sale. I didn't check before coming on if any more ticket sales have happened, but that's fine. It's still all the way in September. So ticket sales are still on. I will post the link in the description for Big Geek Con 2 tickets to buy if any of you listening right now don't have one but want to have one.
Weird Guy 564 says, did anybody mention that Bear the Forever GM got his superhero game on Backer Kit fully funded? No, but congratulations to Bear. Is that the heroic role-playing game that I saw being spun up on Legion of Myth? I meant to check that one out.
Who is Bear the GM?
He's the Bear. He was Bear the Gen X GM. He's a Canuck. He's a pretty decent guy.
Okay.
Never he's heard of him. Interesting fella. So,
but there's all kinds of folks on.
Yeah, there's some, you know,
out there that I've never
heard it's of. Hard to believe, Joe, there are some people on YouTube that's never heard of us.
Oh, yeah.
It's so hard to imagine. Believe. Yes.
I imagine so.
Oh, it's his version. Ooh, Heroic is his version of Phase Rip. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Now you've intrigued me even more. Okay.
So Phase Rip has two, I mean, the TSR Phase Rip, it actually has two versions. It has a basic version that was released in a kind of a single box. And then they have an advanced version that's slightly different.
Oh, and Elle's saying
it's very expanded.
I haven't seen Victor Gorchev in a while, but he's got something funded. I think I saw that kind of a modern game. And then Luke Gygax and GUI Cube funded Tomb of Gysengax. That doesn't interest me. Have you seen that?
I've seen things about it. I mean, that was part of a video I was watching.
It's 5e. That's not all. It just something about it rubs me the wrong way. It just doesn't.
I think even the name of it's kind of
goofy.
It's goofy.
And they claim it's going to be dark and gritty, but they give a goofy name like Gysengax.
Right.
I don't know.
Whatever. It's also 5e.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Modern necessities, but for OSC. So a modern version of OSC.
Didn't I thought that had been funded.
I think he just made like a smaller PDF of his ideas, and I think it went full on supplemental book mode.
Oh, okay. Because I bought the I supported the modern necessities.
A supplement book mode. And Elle says that the tomb will be for OSR also. Well, that's good. Also, as in like they're going to double stat it. That's interesting. So it's not really up my alley. I don't know.
You know, it really, I'm sure that Luke is fine, but it really rubbed me the wrong way when the guy titled, Professor DM titled the video and saying, hey, you're going to learn all of Gary Gygax's secret home rules. And there weren't any, not a single one.
No.
He said, what were the special rules he used that weren't in the game? And Luke was like, oh, he just played the game. They didn't use the armor weapon versus armor table. And there was probably other things like that, but it's more, he omitted some rules we didn't like.
Because that's the right decision. You shouldn't use that table. It's dumb. Well, I'm not interested in that level of detail. I'm not interested.
But I'm pretty sure there's a way to do that much easier without a huge table probably is.
David Gwill had a comment in our world. He said, what if each world has its own sub-race? That could work.
Sure.
We'll put that down as a possibility. Joe and I have to talk about
subhumans.
Yeah. You know, that's something I didn't hear much about. Did you? El brought up another little tidbit. He said Matthew Mercer had a depression party on Twitter. I don't know. With Granny.
I saw a picture of him and I saw he had his. The picture had his finger right here, and I thought that the pink part of it was he pulled his eye down and all that. But I heard
there was some buzz,
stuff going on with him.
Honestly,
he's on the outs or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Iron Man said, "I really liked the Luke interview, but the reasons might require a conversation." Oh, I don't. No, if I didn't watch it. I just don't know how. I'm not drawn to the idea of it.
Right.
And there's a lot of people in there I don't even know who's writing it. And that's okay. I mean, I'll give it a look now that it's
got No. I don't care about Mercer's ideas about Hamas. Is he like a supporter?
Yeah.
But one of those weird lefties that think Hamas is okay when there's hardly any good guys over there. When they're blowing up the kids.
Hamas is less good.
Yeah, very much less.
Yeah.
They got some weird stuff like, Hamas is, they're freedom fighters. No, they're Their whole idea is kill Israel.
They were terrorists when I was little. Come on, get out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
Weird guy says, Bears phase rip game makes a few changes. Now combat compares attacker to defender. Not just attacker skill only. You like opposed roles, don't you, Joe? The idea of them?
Well, I don't know if this is opposed. It's just they comparing the attacker to the defender.
And a better
XP system. It's not just my combat skill says this. I'm going to roll against my combat skill and not even consider who I'm attacking. So
I have a phase rip game that someone made it like in a clone. It's just called phase rip on drive through years ago. And I do kind of like that system, but I have enjoyed Savage Worlds for supers. For me, that's my favorite supers setting. It doesn't do like super cosmic heroes all that great, but it does low street level to pretty tough, almost not quite Avengers level heroes. I think it does it pretty well. I mean, you can make some quasi Spider-Man, quasi.
You have to make some pretty house rulesy changes to get four color.
Oh, okay. It's not a post roll.
Right.
Okay.
Not ghosting.
Thanks, weird guy. All right, cool.
You compare the two and then make a roll based on that. Yeah.
So did you already give the plug for Big Geek Con, didn't you?
Yeah.
All right. And you talked about BGE.
Yeah.
And you're going to have all the links and stuff and all that good stuff. L says he loves Bennies and dice for stats.
Yeah, he loves almost Savage Worlds is going to replace old D&D for him.
Yeah, and Planescape is a close second. I understand that. Fair enough. I see why you think that.
Yeah.
Notice we don't put his chat comment up on the screen.
Yeah, because we're lying.
Because we're lying through our teeth.
We're lying liars.
Lying liars that lie all the time. Yeah. All right. You can check out all the links, all the cool things where you can support us and tell your friends to watch this show. I think we're about done. Don't you think so, Joseph?
Yeah. I don't think I have anything more to say.
Yeah, sure.
I need to go help my wife out taking care of our sick dog.
Right on, dude. You ready to boogie?
Ready to boogie.
All right. Well, guys, thanks for being here tonight. Sorry for the short show, but this is Randy.
And this is Joe.
And remember, if you can't be big like us, then be geeks like us.
Do it.